What's up, guys? Welcome to Birdwatch. I am Christian Clark, the New Orleans Pelicans beat writer for NOLA.com and The Advocate, here today with Jeff Nowak.
Hey, y'all.
Jeff, I am not only the Pelicans beat writer during quarantine, during hiatus, I am also a fledgling tennis player. I've started taking once-a-week lessons just to have something to do to get outside the house. I mean, I feel like I'll just go stir crazy if I'm not exercising a little bit. I played this morning. I sweated like 10 pounds. It was pretty humid this morning. And I think I hit probably a quarter of the balls outside of the 12-foot enclosure. So I would say my little quarantine hobby is going okay. But I wanted to ask you, do you have a quarantine hobby? Is there something you didn't do before that you've taken up during these weird times?
Well, yes. But it's not nearly as productive of a quarantine hobby as going outside and like, you know, being a human. I sit inside and play Call of Duty a lot now. I hadn't done that since college. Okay. But I have returned to not being good at Call of Duty online. It doesn't take long to figure out you're not good at it.
I didn't know tennis was so hard. I didn't know it was so physical. I'm like exhausted. I thought it was just like, okay, this is kind of like playing ping pong. Like, I'll have to exert a little more effort. I'll just like move my wrist around a little bit. No, it's not like that at all. You move your entire body. You have to like set up each shot with like not a violent movement, but a pretty physical, like I got to slide over here. I got to get my arms in position. I mean, it feels like it's like by the end of it, like I did like a boxing class or something. It's so tiring.
Right. I played a lot of tennis in college, not like organized, just a lot of, you know, one-on-one practice sessions, if you will, if you want to call it that. And tennis is definitely one of those sports where you don't appreciate how difficult it is from watching it, because people who are good make it look insanely easy. And then you start playing it and it's just like, wow, okay, I can't do this. I need to learn. You're taking lessons. Lessons is helpful. It's definitely not something that you could just show up and be like, oh, I'm going to be okay at tennis today.
Yeah. I'm like a person who I just go down rabbit holes. Like once I get interested in something, I try to like consume a lot of different things about it. And I read String Theory by David Foster Wallace, just like it's his collection of essays on tennis. And one of the threads, he was a pretty good junior tennis player. You just sweat so much in tennis. And it's right. Like I've never sweated in any other sport besides tennis. It's ridiculous. It's disgusting.
Oh yeah, and that's something that once you realize that about tennis, and you go watch, you know, like the U.S. Open, and you see those 3 to 5 set matches. After the second or third set, they usually change their shirt. It's the only sport where you'll see someone on the sideline taking their shirt off and changing it, because they're literally just sweating buckets. And then you're just like, okay, they're out there for 5 hours at the Australian Open, where this is obviously Australia. It gets insanely hot. And you just wonder. Like it's a minor miracle that you don't see more people collapse from heat exhaustion in a lot of these matches. And that's why it's important in Louisiana specifically to have indoor and outdoor hobbies, because there are times where outdoor hobbies are not going to happen.
Yeah, that's my one outdoor hobby. Did you see that Novak Djokovic held the tennis tournament? Nobody wore masks. There's 50 or 100 people. And guess what? It caused an outbreak.
Yep. And one of your favorite subjects, Mr. Jokic, also a Serbian, I believe he was photographed like hugging Djokovic, I want to say.
Oh, yeah. A very svelte Nikola Jokic was photographed hugging Novak Djokovic. You know, on one hand, everybody was like, oh, look how healthy he is. He's like, is he too skinny? And then we come to find out a couple days later, tested positive for coronavirus, unfortunately. That's why he's not back in the United States yet.
Yeah, that'll happen.
So on, I guess, Tuesday was the day that everyone was, you know, they're supposed to be back in market and everyone is supposed to get tested. So if they're following, you know, the gargantuan memo the NBA sent out, everyone on a team and essential staff member is supposed to get tested this week. And we've already started to get this trickle of positives coming back in. We learned about Jokic. I saw that Jabari Parker tested positive, a couple other guys. And like, there wasn't alarm or anything, which I think is the correct reaction. Like, say, you know, it comes out in 2 weeks that, that two Pelicans tested positive, I don't think that should be any cause for alarm. This is all just part of the process. And, like, this is what the NBA has to do to successfully, you know, pull this campus Disney World idea off. They first have to figure out who gets it. And what they're trying to do is, like, establish this baseline where everyone's at zero, you know, basically before they start group activity in the campus again.
Right. The NBA is basically testing everybody who hasn't already been tested, at the very least, at the same time. So you are inevitably going to see players here, 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 here. Okay, they tested positive. They're going to quarantine. And the idea is basically you can't start group activity until you do that, because if someone's sick and they start practice, then you end up with the thing that would concern me, and I think should be a concern to everybody if it happened, is, you know, three players from the same team get sick. And it just starts spreading in that circle. And that's where you run into serious issues. One player here or there shouldn't be tripping any alarms. But that's the thing you want to avoid, is teams spreading it within the team. And if that happens now, it's not as big of a concern. But if it happens later, that's where you start to have issues where, you know, teams will need to report to Orlando at some point, and they need to be comfortably safe in that thought that they're not bringing it into the quarantine environment, because that's the whole point of the quarantine environment.
Right. So this restart process really began this week when players were required to be back at their home markets. I saw a couple of Pelicans posted on social media that they were back. Lonzo Ball is back here. He was eating some gumbo, which looked pretty good, by the way. That was a bowl of gumbo that I would love to eat.
Always
does. A little warm outside, as many point out, to be eating that kind of food. But you know what? I'm not going to judge. I would absolutely do the same. These teams are going to start individual workouts at the practice facility July 1st. You know, next week is when we'll have an idea of what exactly the rosters are going to look like. Players were supposed to notify their teams by yesterday. Today is Thursday, if they were in or out. This is not set in stone, but I'm expecting the Pelicans to have all of their key contributors. I have not heard otherwise that a key guy is not going to be a part of this. And that's not to say, you know, something could happen and they change their mind. I think we'll probably know for sure next week, but I'm expecting the Pelicans to, you know, have a pretty full roster. And that's really good news, because I think, you know, with the thing they're trying to accomplish, you know, get the ninth seed, stay within four games of the eighth seed, basically win as many games as Memphis during this eight-game span, and then essentially beat Memphis twice in a row, they're going to need all their horses.
I think the Pelicans' roster construction makes it kind of, you know, they are going to avoid a few of the issues that some other teams are going to be plagued with, in that they have a lot of young players, you know, and, you know, no one on the roster is what I would consider, you know, a major NBA thought leader. You know, they don't have the Chris Pauls, the Kyrie Irvings, the guys who are leading a lot of the discussions in terms of player decision making. That's not a negative thing. It's just if your roster has those players on it, you have a lot more questions to consider regarding those players. You know, the Pelicans have a lot of first, second, third year players. So their concern is going to be more health based. You know, Brandon Ingram has a blood clot history. Drew Holiday has a lot of medical history type things to be considering with Lauren, who had cancer and brain surgery 3 years ago, you know, that sort of thing. You know, Derek Favors and JJ Redick are the only true veterans on the roster that you think of. And I can't see JJ Redick foregoing that streak of his to to sit out for any reason. It's going to be interesting to see a lot of the decisions around the league, but I don't expect any major surprises from the Pelicans guys, if that makes sense.
That story that JJ told about the first time he met and had a conversation with Zion was so good, because it was just classic JJ Redick, like kind of just, you know, small talk BS in a little bit, and then very seriously looking at the best prospect since, you know, Anthony Davis, LeBron James, and said, "Hey man, I'm 13 for 13. Don't screw this up for me." And, you know, JJ has that way of talking where he's half kidding and half serious. Like, you don't know whether to laugh or keep a straight face. And I could just imagine being like, okay.
Oh, he's completely serious. He can say it was a joke. He did. He was not joking. He might have laughed when he said it, but it was. I'm sure it had an undertone of like, no, seriously, if you f*** this up for me, things are going to get real.
Anyway. JJ has been one of the few Pelicans I've seen be pretty vocal just about his thoughts about this restart process. I mean, part of it is he has his own podcast. I mean, it's kind of his part-time job to give his own thoughts. It's pretty good stuff. But, you know, one of the things that he pointed out on Twitter was this isn't really a bubble. You know, the NBA's language they used in their 113-page memo, which, by the way, took me about 2 years to read through. I could have read The Old Man and the Sea in less time, and I'm not even kidding about that. They specifically called it a campus. And, you know, I think the reason they did that was two reasons. Campus just sounds better. It sounds more collegial, like, hey, guys, you know, in between games, we'll be hanging out on the lawn and watching socially distant concerts and all of that, and there will be movie screenings. Have you guys ever seen Jaws? And I think the other reason was people are allowed to come in and out of this thing, this campus. The Disney support staff, the folks who are going to be doing the cooking, the cleaning, the maintaining the grounds, that sort of work, they're not going to be required to live on the campus unless something changes. I mean, if you read the memo, those folks aren't even going to be undergoing regular testing, regular daily testing like the players are. Basically, what they're going to rely on is you guys can come in. You know, you have to maintain your distance from players. You can't be in the same room as them. Like, you'll, you know, theoretically clean the room whenever they're not there. But it's not... I think it's a pretty good solution that the NBA has come up with, but I think, you know, it's not perfect, one, because of the rising cases, but also because of that.
Yeah, I will say, you know, it may have felt like it took you 2 years to read it, but that's because every week in the last 3 months has felt like it's been about 6 months, if that makes sense. So, you know, on that scale, it's like dog years to human years. So on that scale, I'm guessing it was more like 2 or 3 weeks.
Yeah, anyways. I mean, time is nothing. Time is meaningless. Yeah,
I've lost all concept of time passing since March 11th. So I think it's Thursday. That could be wrong. I don't even know. I'm not even going to stand by that. I know it is June 25th for what it's worth. I just keep track of it, like in Castaway when he was drawing the lines on the cave wall, you know, that sort of thing.
Yeah. I've got a dry erase marker in my apartment. I just like make a notch for each new day during quarantine.
One of my coworkers, she writes the day on her hand every day. So when she's typing, she can see it. And I was like, that's a good idea until you inevitably forget to write the next day. And then you think it's Tuesday all week? Anyway, moving on. But yeah, the whole plan behind this, the messaging around it has been kind of inconsistent. You know, and from the start, the idea was, as Adam Silver said, it's about the data and not the date. But literally, if you look at Florida's data, it has never looked worse than it does now. And that's been true every week. It just continues to kind of, the exposure in Florida continues to be, you know, progressively concerning. And that's true of a lot of states in the South where they didn't get hit early on. And now they're seeing a lot of that. The analogy that I've seen used a lot is, you know, the boiling a frog thing where you throw a frog into a pot of boiling water and it jumps out immediately because it's like, I don't want any part of this. But you gradually turn up the heat and you know what happens. And I think that's what you're seeing a lot of in the southern states. You know, and Louisiana didn't see quite as much of that because we got hit early on and it was a lot easier to put in a lot of these obvious restrictions that were needed. And that's not necessarily true in Florida. That's not necessarily true in Texas, where they're also seeing it. So from that perspective, they kind of contradicted themselves in that it doesn't seem like the state of Florida is having any tangible impact. The current state of coronavirus in Florida is having any tangible impact on the plans because there's been no indication that they're going to change course. And there's a lot of investment right now already made in that plan. So I think it's going to happen. It's just going to be interesting to see, you know, how bad can it get before you have to change your plans? And I don't know.
Yeah, I think that's a really good question. I actually sat there and watched the Orange County Economic Recovery Task Force meeting the other day over Zoom, and you know, the folks in Orange County are pretty confident that that this thing is going to happen, even though there is concern about just the rising numbers. I mean, I can see why, you know, this took months of planning. Like, the NBA just can't all of a sudden say, actually, we're going to do this in Hawaii. Like, this took a lot of planning. This is like, you know, launching a rocket ship or something like this, this undertaking. And, you know, I think the, not doomsday scenario. I mean, the doomsday scenario is, you know, someone who's a part of this dying. That's the worst case scenario. And I think, you know, things would just stop. But I think, you know, one of the worst case scenarios that could potentially, you know, halt play is, you know, say we're in the Eastern Conference Finals and four or five players on one team get it, and four of those guys are important rotation pieces. I mean, do you really hold an Eastern Conference Finals game, you know, with a patchwork group? I mean, is that a thing you're going to do? I mean, your other option, I guess, is to just pause play for 10 days or else however long it takes those guys to recover. But with that said, you know, I'm looking at the timeline of everything the NBA is trying to pull off here. And I got to tell you, it's there's not a lot of wiggle room between doing this thing and starting next season. I mean, let me just, you know, give you some of the dates on this whole thing. On July 30th, the regular season is going to restart. August 17th, the playoffs are supposed to begin. October 13th, Game 7 of the Finals, if necessary. 5 days later, on October 16th, is the draft. 2 days later after that is free agency. And then the NBA said, you know, in that after that Board of Governors meeting, they want to restart the season on December 1st. These guys are going to get, like, weeks of an offseason.
It's a tight window. And it kind of just feels like whatever happens, happens in that sense. Not in the sense that they're not going to take precautions, but in the sense that, you know, if LeBron gets sick and has to miss, you know, 2 weeks of games, because you're talking, I think the window is 10 to 14 days of quarantine based on, you know, because I think you have to test negative multiple days in a row before they'll deem you clear of the virus. And so it's really going to just be a matter of how long. And if it takes someone longer than that, it could be longer. They're saying 14 days, but if someone's still testing positive after 14 days, they're not going to let them out of quarantine. They're gonna make them stay in until they're done. And so I just don't think, the way it's set up, I don't think that there is anything baked in to say, okay, Anthony Davis and LeBron are out, we're going to wait a couple weeks. It's like, that's not going to happen. They can't do that. So if this thing gets going and it starts rolling, I think you're going to see, you're inevitably going to see a situation, in my opinion, where at least one key player on the team is not available for an important game. And it'll be interesting to see how that breaks down. I also think it's important, like, one of the reasons the NBA is going to be really, really forceful about getting this is because you have to do it. You have to try to bring it back in some way. Otherwise, you have no frame of reference for how it could possibly work. And until you do, there's just no good answer. You know, the Major League Baseball was originally supposed to come back in the early July. And I think, I don't know their latest status, but they've been having issues with player compensation. And, you know, while that doesn't directly impact the NBA, I think seeing another sport operate, there's no way to say it wouldn't help another league in seeing some of the inevitable pitfalls that come into play. And, you know, when you talk about the NFL maybe coming back, the NFL is going to be watching the NBA structure like a hawk, because they have to see that to know what they can do and what works and what doesn't. And there's just so many questions that you can't possibly answer until it starts happening.
I'm absolutely with you that this is something that they have to try, unless, you know, the numbers just get out of control. You know, people who say, oh, the NBA is only doing this because of money. Yeah, I mean, that's true. That's like kind of how it works. I'm sorry. At, you know, hundreds of millions of dollars, billion dollars, like, does matter. These guys want to get paid. And, you know, the other thing I'll say too is, if they just punt on the rest of this season, what do you think is going to change between now and the start of next season in December? I mean, I guess there's a minuscule chance that we could have a vaccine and it's widely rolled out, not very good at all. I mean, I don't feel very confident at all that we're going to have a vaccine for everybody to use by the start of next season. So this is going to be something that you're going to have to deal with next season. So I think you need to at least try this and figure out what you can from this experiment in kind of unfortunate circumstances. But yeah, I'm not really with let's just punt on the whole thing.
And to go on your point about the vaccine, so when we inevitably do get to a point where there is a working vaccine, it's going to end up being in a similar scenario to when all of this started and there was limited testing available. You know, the vaccine will be rolled out to high-risk communities first. So the NBA is not going to be up high on that list of priority vaccinations. So it's not only when it comes out, it's when it's widely enough available that the entire NBA have the availability for this testing, because they will need to have that before they can comfortably go back to, you know, business as usual. So, I mean, when would the 2021 NBA season have started otherwise? October, early October?
Yeah, mid-October.
If they just literally had just cut off the season and said then, I mean, we would be in the exact same situation then. So in the interest of not bankrupting all of these teams and, you know, maybe losing entire franchises in the process, yeah, they got to do something. And, yeah, this feels like the best of a lot of bad options.
Yeah, yeah. So, you know, obviously, if one guy tests positive, they're getting tested every day. There are contingency plans. Those guys have to go to isolation housing. They have to pass, you know, two tests. And those two tests can't be, you know, within 24 hours of each other, basically to prevent a faulty test from allowing a guy to go back out into the world. Like we said, you know, kind of the thing you're really worried about is an outbreak among a team. But I really do think it's a pretty solid plan with everything that we're dealing with. All right, let's switch gears to another plan. Yesterday, Christopher Dotson of Forbes reported that the New Orleans created a bid to host the NBA's restart here in the Crescent City. The report from Forbes basically said that players would have been staying at the Hyatt downtown. They would have played games at Smoothie King Center. The NBA confirmed it. I reached out to the league. It was good reporting by Forbes. I thought, you know, it was interesting stuff. But I just thought it was kind of funny. I mean, like, New Orleans saying that they want to host the NBA's restart is kind of like me, you know, reaching out to Margot Robbie's people or something and saying, hey, I'd love to take her out to dinner sometime. You know, maybe the nice tapas restaurant in my neighborhood. What does she think? It was never going to happen. It's just, you know, it's funny it's coming out now. It's just not something that was going to happen.
I don't know. I feel like Margot is a pretty down to earth type person. She might be into it. I'm just saying. But yeah, I think the idea that New Orleans could host it is kind of funny, but it's also like, no, they can't. I mean, you just know the city. Like, the idea that Disney World is able to offer this kind of like secluded atmosphere that's like, it's all closed anyway. So they're able to kind of cut people off. You want players to avoid, you know, wandering around and doing something that would potentially expose them to coronavirus, and you're plopping them down, you know, a half mile away from Bourbon Street, but not even. It's probably not the safest option.
Yeah, I mean, we've got hotel rooms. We've got, you know, great catering. I'm sure those guys would have been eating well. But yeah, the whole part of the Disney appeal is that, you know, when these guys aren't playing, they don't have to just stay in their hotel room the entire time watching Netflix. And if they're at the Hyatt, that's probably what you got to be doing. You know, there are no, like, you know, let's go out and play some golf probably. There's no, like, let's go hang out on the lawn or anything like that. Like, the collegial vibe that they're kind of trying to sell, you just can't really get that in New Orleans the way that it is right now. I'm just trying to picture Giannis Antetokounmpo in the Hyatt for 3 months, because that's how long the teams that are making the NBA Finals are going to have to be at this host site. I mean, imagine Giannis having to stay at the Hyatt downtown for 3 months. How stir crazy he would be going. Like, I just imagine him walking around, knocking on teammates' doors, like Brook Lopez's doors, acting like Jack Nicholson in The Shining or something.
Knocking on the door with an axe. Yeah, it's, I mean, that's one of the things that you kind of just take for granted. It's like, oh, okay, this is a plan. Will it work? Okay. Well, are the players going to do it? Okay. But like, there is no frame of reference for locking is not a fair word to use, but sequestering 300, you know, young people there, because everyone in the NBA, aside from the coaches and, you know, support staff, they're all young. They're all, you know, maybe a handful of them are 40 or over, but these are all like reasonably young people who now have nothing to do besides play a game and work out and practice and do all of the weird, you know, movie screenings and stuff like that, where they're definitely going to tweet out spoilers for movies. Like, I think that they were going to do like an advanced screening of the Black Widow movie. Like, you know, someone's going to tweet out something.
Yeah, guys, we rented King of Staten Island for you. You don't even have to pay the $20 to watch it.
Right. Because that's a budget issue involved with a lot of NBA players making so they can rent movies. But it's going to be interesting to see. So the first couple weeks, I think there's going to be a novelty to it. It's going to be fun. It's be like going away to summer camp. But after about a month of a lot of these players, you know, the players that make the conference, the teams that make the conference finals, you got to imagine there's going to be a stir crazy element to it where you're just locked in a room. You're going back to the same hotel room. And then you're going and playing a 7-game series against a team that you kind of hate at that moment. Put it in this perspective. If you remember 2 years ago during the playoffs, Terry Rozier and Eric Bledsoe were having this like blood feud where Terry Rozier was calling him Drew Bledsoe and Eric Bledsoe was saying, I don't even know who that is and that sort of thing. And it's like, can you imagine how heated that would get if like that was literally the only thing that you could focus on for 2 weeks as you play this playoff series? Like, are there going to be fights? People are going to be so worked up and so antsy that you have to imagine there's going to be a lot of testy atmospheres going on in these games too.
Didn't Terry Rozier show up to a game in a Drew Bledsoe jersey too?
Yes, he did. That was the year that the Scary Terry meme was created, which is one of my favorite playoff subplots of the last several years. Yeah, and then they replaced him with Kemba Walker and sent Terry Rozier to out to pasture with the Hornets. So yeah.
Well, Terry got the bag though. I don't know if there will be fighting. I do know that there will be tampering. I can't wait to read the oral history of these guys staying at Disney World for 5 weeks to 3 months and all the tampering that went down. I got to imagine that everybody is going to be trying to tell Devin Booker to demand a trade. Like, bro, get out of Phoenix. Like, what are you even doing there? I could see some Pelicans, you know, trying to recruit other dudes at the hotel they're staying at. Like, it's a very easy sell for the Pels. Like, we are on the rise, man. Like, just imagine what we're going to be in a couple of years. So I'm very excited about that aspect of it, too.
Yeah, I think I saw a tweet from Rob Perez a few weeks ago, which was like, the level of tampering that's going to occur at these Disney hotels will never be matched again. And it's true. I mean, you're going to be putting these players in situations that in any other circumstance, teams around the league would be sending letters to the NBA front office being like, this can't happen. Like, literally the situation the Pelicans were in with the Lakers last year. If that doesn't happen in these hotels, it'll be a major upset. And it's going to be interesting to see how the league handles that, because you can't stop it from happening. You can't stop Giannis and, you know, LeBron from running into each other at the vending machine or the ice machine in the hotel and him saying like, hey, Giannis, how's that contract treating you? It's kind of cold in Milwaukee, isn't it?
Yeah. I mean, imagine like somebody posts a very wholesome picture of Zion and Damian Lillard playing cornhole in the yard outside the hotel and just the ways that people will run with that.
But no doubles ping pong. That is important. That is in the rule book. No doubles ping pong. But to be fair, I'd hope the NBA players have more respect for themselves than to play doubles ping pong.
Yeah, if you're a grown man playing doubles ping pong, I mean, you know, ping pong table is already pretty small. They're very large people. I mean, you're just too big to be playing doubles ping pong if you're an NBA player, right? Like, you both can't even stand there.
Right. Can you imagine Marc Gasol playing ping pong? He literally takes up the entire side of the table on his own. And then you put another big center. You put Zion next to him. Zion and Marc Gasol on a doubles ping pong tournament. It would be it would just be them literally standing still, just reaching over each other. Anyway.
So when I was in Denver, Nikola Jokic's pregame routine, he would play the Nuggets trainer in ping pong before every home game. And, you know, Jokic has incredible hand-eye coordination. He also just has that reach. So he was just unbeatable in tennis. I would love to see a tennis tournament between NBA players. But kind of back to this idea of hosting the restart in New Orleans, to me, you know, this story became particularly interesting, I guess, when the mayor tweeted out a snippet of the article from Forbes, where she's basically kind of, you know, highlighting the part of the article that said, hey, this could have been great for tourism. She deleted it about an hour later, but that was kind of nuts to me. You know, the whole messaging from American Trail has been, hey, no big events, no big events. You know, we canceled Jazz Fest, we canceled Essence Fest. She's already talked about no Mardi Gras in 2021, and then, or whoever runs her social media account is basically suggesting that, like, yeah, holding this event here where no fans are going to be allowed in the stands and media outlets are even not going to send people. This could have been great for our tourism.
Right. And first, how? In the sense that these players aren't going to be wandering around the city. Was the plan to market this as, like, come to New Orleans where we're playing basketball and you can be near it? I don't know how that would have worked out. But I think I said earlier, like, the messaging around a lot of this from, you know, at the local level and state level and the NBA level has been inconsistent at best. And the fact is, this is an economic necessity for the league and the teams and the structure of, and maintaining the structure and keep making sure the salary cap doesn't drop by $50 million. It's not going to be about getting fans to the game. It's going to be about giving the fans something to watch. That tweet was tone deaf at best, I think. And I'm not sure who sent it, but they probably did not clear that with more than a few people. It kind of reminds me of when the Falcons tweeted out that they had won the aggregate score total over the Saints after losing on Thanksgiving Day last year. And it's just like, who read this and was like, that got them. Nailed it.
Yeah, it's tough. You gotta have good social media people. It makes a big difference. So I told you I watched the Orange County Economic Task Force Zoom meeting the other day. You know, the one argument they're making on that thing is that that's not going to be great for tourism, but this is going to be great for exposure. You know, Orlando, people are going to be talking about it, and maybe that will make people want to come here in the future. And I mean, I guess that might be a valid argument, but like, I'm not sure that people are going to watch games inside empty arenas and like be getting B-roll footage of a guy sitting in the lounge of a hotel staring at his iPad blankly and think, yep, I really got to visit that city one day. I'm not sure I even buy that one either.
Looks like a great time. Yeah, it's like, are you suggesting that people don't know where Orlando is? That's the thing. Like, it would be great if this was held in Albuquerque, New Mexico, and you're like, it's great for tourism because people are learning about Albuquerque. It's like, people already know about New Orleans. They don't need to see it on TV to be like, let's go there. I don't see that as a valid argument. But, you know, I do think to an extent they're going to be advertising opportunities that wouldn't have existed otherwise. You know, you're going to be able to put up banners in the stadium and stuff like that. And I guess from that perspective, maybe. But again, like I said, that's not the point of this. That's not why decisions are supposedly being made from that perspective. So,
yeah, I mean, I don't know about you, but I feel like, you know, 2 days after I get the vaccine, like, I'm just going to subconsciously black out this entire time period from my life. Like, I'm just going to have one memory of refreshing my phone on the couch, and that's all I'm going to remember from quarantine. I don't know. It's not going to be something that I'm going to look back fondly. I just don't feel like I'll have any memory of it, like, a year after I get the vaccine. I'll just be like, oh, yeah, that was the thing that happened, and it was pretty boring.
I personally would vote that whenever it all ends, we all agree to just take the calendar and just flip it back to January 1st, 2020, and then we go on from there. And it's like it never happened. That, if we could do that, that would have my vote. So I would definitely not be like, oh, I saw the name Orlando, Florida on a lot of NBA or NBA broadcasts. If anything, I will actively be trying to forget it, like you said. So yeah, that's a good point.
Okay, so while we're looking forward, Sam Vecenie of The Athletic, a really good basketball analyst, someone I read pretty regularly, he did this project where he ranked every team by their rookie scale contracts. He really likes, you know, the young talent the Pelicans have assembled. They were his number one teams in terms of guys, you know, on the rookie scale deals. And he did a pretty in-depth article just ranking every player that the Pelicans have on that first contract. I want to read you the rankings that he's got, and I want you to tell me, you know, how much you're feeling it, whether there's any that kind of stick out to you. But yeah, I thought it was a pretty good list. All right, are you ready?
Mm-hmm.
All right, number one, I don't think there's any debate, Zion Williamson. Number two, Brandon Ingram. Number three, Lonzo Ball. Fourth, Jackson Hayes. Five, Josh Hart. Six, Nickeil Alexander-Walker. Seven, Kenrich Williams. Eight, Didi Luzada, the draft and stash, who is probably going to be coming over this next season. Ninth, Frank Jackson. And 10th, the legend, Zylan Cheatham.
Don't you?
I really do like Zylan Cheatham.
I was going to say, I like Zylan a lot. I think he's, you know, okay, so first, one thing I do want to say that before we get into a lot of this, like Zylan, in Zylan's situation specifically, one thing that this return scenario is going to offer for a lot of guys is the players on two-way contracts are going to get an opportunity that they would not have had otherwise. If there's any player in the NBA that benefits from this scenario, it's the two-way players, because on their contract, they would not have been allowed to play in the playoffs. That's part of the two-way contract. They can play, I want to say, 45 games at the NBA level throughout the season. And now with this return scenario and the limited number of players available, you know, there's going to be a lot of two-way players who get actual playing time in the playoffs, I think. Tremont Waters from the Celtics is a good example of that. He was the G League Player of the Year, and he's on a two-way contract, and he's probably going to be up on that roster. And Zylan could appear in a Pelicans game, especially if there's a player sit out. But, no, I mean, I think that list is pretty on point. The thing that jumps out to me is the fact that the Pelicans have – he actually lists Josh Gray at number 11, too. They have 11 players – that can be considered a rookie scale contract. That's insane.
That's nuts.
That's just bonkers. I mean, how many players on the Lakers are on a rookie scale contract? Like five? Actually, that's probably not a good example because they're so top heavy that they had to fill those roster spots somehow. But like the Bucks, for instance, you know, they might have like two or three. The Pelicans have 11.
And this was after a concerted effort by the front office of, hey, we need to bring in some guys who've been around for a while to show these guys the way, too.
So I do have one question. So when he's ranking these, is it current or is it, like, projected when he's coming up with these rankings?
Current.
Current. Okay. Then I do have a few issues with it, which is I would put Josh Hart ahead of Jackson Hayes. No question. And that's just because – if you put those two guys on a court right now and you give them like a ranking on like 2K, yeah, Josh Hart, I'd give it like an 82. Jackson, I'd give it like a 75. Because, you know, in like at the athletic attributes, Jackson Hayes is obviously going to be a lot higher, but there's so many intangible attributes that he just does not possess. And there's no guarantee that he picks those up quickly. Whereas Josh Hart, if he does all those intangible things, he gets the hustle bonus and stuff like that. So I would put him easily above Jackson, and I'd put Jackson and Nickeil pretty close together. I would consider putting Nickeil ahead of him because, again, I think that the understanding of basketball concepts is an important part of the progression of a rookie player. I honestly don't know enough about Didi. I haven't seen him play. Barely at all. I've seen a couple clips. He hit a game winner for the Sydney Kings at some point.
Yeah, the read on him is he's got a pretty good chance to be a good defender in the NBA. He's got a real high motor. You know, the offensive part of his game is where there are some question marks. Is he just going to be able to knock down open threes? I don't know. I mean, is he just going to be able to do enough on offense? Because I think he plays really hard. He's got the right attitude. People think he can defend, so we'll see about that one. But just looking at this group as a whole, you know, I'm pretty optimistic about the Pelicans, but obviously I'm biased, so I'm always very interested in what do people from outside think about this group, because I think it's just so easy to overrate the young talent of the team that you're covering or you're a fan of or whatever. Sam had a line in there where he said, there's a long way to go, but I wouldn't be surprised if the Pelicans won an NBA title between 2023 and 2030. I mean, yeah, I would say that's something that's on the table and you need a lot of development. And, you know, I kind of think back to, I listened to one of JJ Redick's pods with Bill Simmons the other day. And, you know, Bill was asking him about Zion Williamson and Joel Embiid and just, you know, what do those young guys have to do to get to the next level? And I think, you know, one of the keys for the Pelicans is specifically Zion is just learning to be obsessed about taking care of his body in like the same way a LeBron is. That's something I'm really going to be watching for during this restart is what kind of shape Zion is in. And really going forward, JJ talks about, taking care of yourself as it's like a lifestyle. It's like the way, monitoring your sleep and make sure you're getting enough REM sleep or whatever, eating the right food. JJ really talked about that's kind of the difference between these guys with so much talent who, merely have good careers and great careers. And I totally agree. I think that's just a huge thing for the Pelicans is does Zion, I guess, live that lifestyle or whatever that you see like a LeBron live?
Yeah, I think that quote that you brought up about 2023 and 2030 winning an NBA title, I think that time frame is interesting because so 2023, I'm assuming you're talking about the 2023 season and not just 2023. So that means that this year, obviously, next year, no. 2022, no. Then the 2023-2024 season is when he views that title window to be opening, and then the next seven or so years. So that's interesting for a few reasons. One, because Brandon Ingram is on the final year of his rookie contract. So that means that you're assuming, well, I mean, in general, all of these players are on the rookie scale deals. So you would have to make a decision at some point whether you're bringing them back or you're matching offer sheets, that sort of thing. So in 2023, you could theoretically not have Ingram, Lonzo Ball, Josh Hart. In 2023, Zion would be in the fourth year of his rookie deal, approaching a possible max extension. Same with Alexander Walker and Jackson Hayes. A guy like Kenrich, who knows? A guy like Didi, who knows?
I feel very confident that they're at least getting Zion, Brandon Ingram, and Lonzo Ball coming back on second contracts.
Oh, I agree. And I mean, they already picked up the fifth year on Lonzo and Josh Hart, so they're going to be here for another year no matter what. Ingram is going to be up for that max extension this year. I just think that's an interesting because that means the next 2 years, he does not view them as like potential title contenders. Whereas like after that, assuming that they make the right decisions and they bring in the right players and they draft well. That's another part of it that isn't really referenced in this is that they have all of these draft picks coming in from the Lakers. And 2023 is when they'll start to get the brunt of those pick swaps and stuff like that really impacting. It could also be factoring in the Lakers in 2021. They're going to have AD and LeBron, but who knows in 2022? What if they bottom out? What if LeBron leaves and they bottom out? AD goes and signs in Chicago. And, all of a sudden the Pelicans end up getting a top pick because they can swap with the Lakers or they get that pick. So that's another factor that I think goes into there.
Well, that's what's so interesting about the Pelicans is not only do they already have, good cards, they have a lot of poker chips too that they can cash in, down the road. They got a lot of picks that could be really interesting depending on how things go with the Lakers.
So one thing that we haven't really discussed at all, which is going to be a major thing that these teams are going to be dealing with immediately, is the fitness level of people coming back. It's going to be fascinating to see. You're inevitably going to see guys who took care of themselves well and then guys who didn't take care of themselves well in terms of a fitness standpoint. And seeing that happen in real time as these games start getting played, it's going to be something fascinating to watch, especially with guys like Zion, where their fitness level is incredibly important to making sure that they have the long-term viability in their knees and their back, and they carry, especially the guys who carry a lot of weight. Like a guy like Brandon Ingram, I think gaining a few pounds might help him. So you almost root for Brandon Ingram and Jackson Hayes to have been, throwing down some gumbo and bulking up a little bit.
Well, I think Brandon Ingram has thrown down plenty of gumbo. They've tried to put weight on him, and it's just like been an impossible task. But yeah, I mean, the fitness of this is going to be really interesting. ESPN had a report out Wednesday that, Zion's in really good shape, which, I think it was pretty interesting. That's great to hear. I'm also of the belief that there's just no substitute for playing 5-on-5 basketball. Like, I think, it's very possible that he does look better. But, like, you can't simulate those, like, running and cutting and jumping motions anyway besides, playing 5-on-5 basketball. And I think there's just only so much you can do in your own home. Like, you can do a million Zoom workouts, but and I think you could still feel winded, you know, the first time you get back there and do a scrimmage or whatever.
I mean, that's also that's true for me. So I am not in a very good shape at all, but I have been trying. I can only imagine if I was trying to actually play competitive basketball, that would be a difficult thing to just jump right back into. And no matter what happens, they are going to be jumping right back into competitive basketball. There's not, it is objectively not enough time to comfortably get back into full game shape before they're expected to start playing games. It's just impossible. I'm sorry. There's no way that a majority of the league is going to be at the fitness level that they would want to be playing basketball. And how teams get over that is going to be a big part of that first eight, especially that first eight games. And for the Pelicans, they don't have the luxury of saying, okay, this is just kind of a ramp up process. The Lakers, the Bucks, they can't, you know, they can go in and let Giannis be on a minutes restriction, let LeBron be on a minutes restriction and work their way up. Pelicans have to go, you know, 100 miles an hour from the jump. So
right. We already know that they have to win at least as many games as the Memphis Grizzlies, or else they'll fall, you know, more than four games behind and not make the play-in. And we also know that they're going to have to win at least one more game than the Portland Trail Blazers because of kind of the way the NBA has decided to score the standings, basically by winning percentage instead of pure games back. So you're right, there is no margin for error. Even if they don't like make the play-in tournament or get the eighth seed, you know, I don't think that automatically means like, oh, this was disappointing or whatever. I just think you want to just see good fight from them in whatever these eight games are. And I'm just glad we're going to have a little more basketball, because if there's going to be no Pelicans basketball for like 8 months, that would have been a real bummer, man.
From the perspective of just having something to watch, even just, I think there's a lot of people who, and I consider myself one of them, you know, when sports went away, it's like, that's such a big part of your daily life, especially for me. And I'd be lying if I said there wasn't like some like mild scale depression going on with just like, that's why I'm playing Call of Duty. It's the time I would normally be watching League Pass, because that's just what I do. It's like, how do I replace that now? And I will admit that I am very excited to at the prospect of being able to watch these games, because it's not only just the Pelicans play, it's going to be NBA basketball basically constant for 3 months, because there's only a handful of courts. There's going to be games going on simultaneously, because that's the only way that you can actually structure it and get all those games in. So it's just going to be like, it's going to be the NCAA tournament for the better part of 2 months or 3 months. And that's going to be crazy.
Yeah, I mean, J.R. Smith is back on the Lakers. Just think of the Woj bombs that we're going to get from the campus during this time. But I think it'll be healthy. I think it'll be good. You know, I've been watching tennis highlights on YouTube, so my tennis highlights intake will probably decrease a little bit. So I'm looking forward to it.
I've been watching replays of all the games that, like I rewatched the Saints-Giants 2015 game, where it was like 51-49 or something, like 51-48. And it's like, I've been watching games just to stress myself out, because I know that they're stressful games, just to feel alive. So real NBA basketball help.
Well, I think we're going to feel that again soon, provided that these numbers just don't continue getting out of control, but it should be fun.
Wear a mask.
That's right. All right, guys. Appreciate it. And we'll talk to you next week.
Peace.